The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Good evening all, and welcome to the Grapple Weekend Show for Friday, 24th of June, 2022. I'm Benno.
And I'm JP.
And JP, we're here for another public weekend show. It's been a while since we've done one of the big preview weekenders. Obviously, we missed out last AEW pay-per-view. I was in Vegas. I don't know if I've mentioned that enough times, but we didn't get one in then. So, yeah, overdue. Nice to see the viewing public out there on YouTube.
It is, isn't it? It has been a while, and they're seeing me. This week I've been very ill with COVID, so like just getting back on my feet at the moment for this, and what a finer way to do it than by supporting by getting Forbidden Door, which I'm sure we will be lovely, kind, calm, reflective when we're previewing that later on. Who else has dropped out of it?
Honestly, mate, I think this is we're going to be plugging right at the very bottom, as this is a free show on YouTube. Obviously, we thank our patrons as always for helping fund this show and everything else we do. They just joined us for a half hour pre-show there. We were having a good old chat, but the reason this one's free is that we do have from our friends on Fight a referral code, grapplelab.com/support to go to if you want to order the pay-per-view. Now, as we will always say, it's up to you. If you want to order it, order it. You know, we're not gonna shout at you and tell you to order it just because it benefits us. It's just if you're gonna get it through our link. And I feel like this is the most true that statement has ever been, JP.
It really is, isn't it? It's up to you, folks. You have free will and you have control of your own monetary decisions.
The first one we did, where it was me, you, and Joe, I remember the first time we got a Fight Code, we were all excited, and we were like, and AEW was just launching, it was like, buy the pay-per-view, we'll get money too, but buy it, support this company. And now it's a bit like, I suppose, if you want to get it, you know, it's up to you.
They're doing fine.
Whatever you think. They don't need our money.
They've sold 15,000 tickets for this, I don't think you give two shits about us. But it is that choice. For it as well. I mean, I think as well, listening to some of the figures, it'll probably do well in terms of pay-per-view buyer rates. How that translates on in the future will be the kind of interesting side of it.
I think they'll always do well. It's how well, I suppose, is the question. Yeah, definitely at time of record. I was just on the media call. Unfortunately, I didn't get a question in, but Tony felt rattled. But I don't know, the most defensive I think I've heard him be. You know, people were asking him about he dropped it himself about AEW having any kind of wellness policy or whatever, and then he was trying to talk himself out of a corner. He spent probably about 15 minutes going on about all the injuries they've had, which we will reference when it comes to preview the show later. It is a relevant factor, but I wouldn't say he's fully gotten to, but he threw in a little thing where he was like, somebody asked, is it tracking, numbers wise? And he was like, it's tracking pretty well right now, tracking like a normal AEW pay-per-view. But obviously, that's our hardcore fans who are going to buy this regardless. It's the casuals, we'll see how the sales go. It was like listening to a Bischoff podcast, or, isn't that the stuff those kind of guys reel off? The casuals and the hardcores and stuff. I don't know. He just felt like a man who was confident, but maybe not as confident as he usually is when we hear them on these things.
Well, and could have been a lot more confident. We'll talk about the injuries when, in terms of the amount of people out on the show, but given what they have and what the concept is, does it live up to that? Either way, could you book a better card out of this? Yes, would be the answer. And I'd imagine a lot of other people too, and to get to it has been pretty turgid stuff.
I think there's many podcasts out there who are doing like really positive Forbidden Door preview shows on YouTube. Like, I'm sure there's some out there. But, like, I don't know. I feel like, because we get a lot of grief for being relatively critical of AEW. And, like, I always felt like there was a period where, like, we were loving the show. But I feel like our job is to, you know, say what we like and what we don't like about stuff. And I think as Brits, maybe we've got that that reputation for being a little bit more dour and maybe saying the negative more than we do the positive. I'll get accused often, JP, of hating everything on Twitter. Too bad. That's just people in general will say that. But we always used to balance it. We'd always be like, no. We point out the things we hate, but we also point out the things we love. And people will always focus on, you know, the negative stuff, especially when it's something they care about and that they're themselves, you know, feeling positive about. But then I feel like the wind has turned a little bit, and there's definitely more podcasts like ours out there than there is super, super positive, you know, AEW podcasts out there.
It's hard to defend the TV. Like, and there's always been reason to be like kind of a healthy skepticism, but it feels like there's a lot of stuff with, as we've spoken about previously on Spotlight, some of the like kind of more booking trope side, and then being able to get around it because you have two brilliant workers in there and you give them 15 minutes for them to go out, and because they're not working lots of house shows, they're going to go hell for leather on that. But yeah, I'm like, it's not been a fun build to watch and preview, and this, you know, in some ways, should we have been seeing a build for this when you think of all the various computations about this? But, I mean, financially, it's already a success. The attendance itself speaks out to it. And as we'll speak about, there'll be some, like, good matches and stuff. But it's, like, it's what it could have been. And the kind of thing that you think, if you want to knock everything out the park and really become a contender at WWE, this is the kind of shit you got to really get right.
Yeah, it does feel a bit like, you know, I don't want to like get into that hardcore versus casual stuff, but I do think, you know, it wasn't a guarantee they were going to do so well in the United Center this weekend. That is absolutely something they should be applauded for, you know, that those tickets move so quickly. But I just don't think it necessarily is going to correspond with pay-per-view buyers. It's just, like Ben said in the chat there, he's going 120,000. That feels a little bit on the high side. But I know, from following Ben on Twitter, I think he's higher on this show than likes it, though we are. I think it's going to be, it's one of them we're used to year-on-year increases as well on AEW pay-per-views. And this is the other thing about this is the fifth pay-per-view being added. This is a pay-per-view being added a month after a previous one. This is a pay-per-view full of, you know, New Japan talent that, you know, I think, I would say the majority of the AEW fan base are aware of, the majority of the AEW fan base watching New Japan know. So there is that investment level that might not be quite there. And like we've said, you know, we're going to get into the card today and it's not really got the likes of us doing somersaults over it. So yeah, I think it's, I'm thinking more in like the 80 range. I'm thinking on the lower end, but it is hard to call. You know, we've had that feeling before about these pay-per-views, and they've, you know, outdone our expectations and outdone other people's expectations. I don't know. Do you want to throw a gambler's number out there, JP?
I'll say 100k. Like, I think it will just go past that, but it'll be at the lower end because it doesn't have like your big draw there, your CM Punk and Brian Danielson types on there. That's the thing. It does kind of, and obviously the missing stars, that's going to have an effect as well. But I don't think there's going to be necessarily, I don't know, it's not presented in the way that these things kind of should be presented, where there isn't that kind of level of interaction in there. But there you go.
Well, Darren says here in the chat, and this is our, we've got there's the public chat that the people on public YouTube can see, and in our Patreon chat. And if you do join our Patreon, patreon.com/grapple, over there, you can enter the private Patreon link, which is how the guys were watching the pre-show right before this, and we're chatting to us live about all kinds of nonsense and fun stuff, which is kind of how those half hours go. They tend to be the A show at this point compared to the actual rest. We're in a great mood for the Patreon pre-shows, and then it gets to the main show, and it's like, well, this is shit. That's shit. Everything's terrible. Life is crap. We're actually in a good mood on those pre-shows, but patrons get them every time for Spotlight. We've just done a half-hour one for them there, but as well, yeah, if you're on the Patreon side, any chats that you do put into us, we will be putting on the big screen and obviously reacting to it as we go. I will not the BT bus comment with any kind of response. Apparently, Andy's saying here, my heart belongs in Enfield.
I live there and my heart doesn't belong there. We talk, yeah.
Dylan Wendt, he's in the chat. Apparently, there's you know, I saw some spoilers out for them today as well. People are still going, you know, they're still existing somehow, trundling along. You know, they're being taken over by big NXT. But I suppose is actually before we get into the AEW stuff, is a news note, I suppose, we haven't covered in the daily updates this week. What do you make of on the big NXT side that the Triple H is coming back doing rah-rah speeches apparently to the guys in the back? Apparently the quote was "I'm back" from our mate Hunter. What do you reckon that means? Is NXT 3.0 on the way? Is that what we're getting?
I think so. I think it's going to be how do I provide Vince with what he wants. This is the weird thing, is we've got that dynamic now and we don't really know what it's like between them. Stephanie as interim CEO, Vince as head of creative, still with the obvious investigation going on into him, and Triple H returning and seeing to go into the slot that was there. Are we going to see a complete rebrand? I don't think we are. I think he's going to be a sense of, I'm just going to give, like, effectively this is what he wants, but he's just going to try and tidy it up and sort of be slightly less rough around the edges. But and maybe he'll get some people who are up in the main roster who aren't being used, and he might be able to get them down to NXT. That could be the sort of route, rather than him going up and signing all of the people who've just previously been released from them.
He was like, yeah, Gargano, I want you. You know, he's got just going through this Rolodex of lads. Maybe there's some hope left for some of those released NXT lads and ladies. I think it's going to be like a case of just, I think maybe he gets a bit more power. I love the idea that, you know, maybe Stephanie's like, while Vince is distracted, snuck him back down there and go on, go look, just muscle in. Look, Vince isn't paying attention again. You can do what you want, but I think it'll be like, if there is a new Triple H-led regime of NXT coming, it'll just be those parts, won't it? It'll be the young lads moulded in a Triple H way.
Yeah. And Bruce Pritchard isn't there, because he's head as sort of acting head of talent relations, and he was a big factor down in NXT, wasn't he? Mm. In terms of just instilling that vision. So I imagine he's just going to sort of go into it. I don't see him doing anything kind of crazy in the first, because they've got to ride out what happens with Vince. Then at that point, it's like, you know, see where the cards fall down.
Well, just replying to the public chat, by the way, Yuzora Hart asks in there, why you can't utilize Super Chats? It's because we've put it down as a sponsored stream, because
yes,
sponsored by the good folks at fightgraplap.com/support if you are ordering the pay-per-view. But I'll see in the background if I can do anything about that. Alternative is to join the Patreon, or if I know Yuzora is one of my favorite commenters on the YouTube side. You throw something on the public YouTube, I will still we'll still read it out, even if we can't. We can't put it publicly on the big screen. But yeah, that stuff out the way, JP. I suppose we should we should get into the news previews and otherwise, if people are new to this on our Patreon side, we usually just do a roundup of the week's news on a Friday and then preview the weekend's action fresh for Spotlight on Monday. Obviously, this being a pay-per-view weekend, things are always a little bit different. I mean, we're not going to be reviewing Dynamite, I don't think, when it comes around to Spotlight next week, as the pay-per-view will have happened by then. So yeah, you got a little bonus Dynamite review on this, as well as a big review of the Forbidden or Nothing coming this weekend, and we've got some quick reviews and previews of some other action going on this weekend. But yeah, we always start off with the news, JP, and it's usually the the lead story on a Friday, and it's kind of the main story we got here, and it is related to what we were just talking about. It is Dynamite's viewing numbers for this week, the June 22nd edition of the show, coming from Milwaukee, averaged 878,000 viewers and approximately a 0.31 in the down, approximately 404,000 viewers. That was up from the very, very disappointing week the previous week. 15% gain in overall viewers and a 11% jump in the key demo. Obviously, we talked in lots of detail on Spotlight about how, you know, that was a disappointing number, but we didn't want to jump to conclusions about it. You know, TV was down overall or something. You know, Dave Meltzer's been shouting from the rooftop this week. But, you know, while 1849 was did top cable, and that was that's the biggest thing, it was number one for the night. It was still Dynamite's second lowest of 2022. So shout out to our friends at postwrestling.com and John Pollock for reporting that. But yeah, all in all, you know, they were up against Game 4 with the Stanley Cup, you know, which did particularly well. And we had a big rebound in the female viewership as well. What do you make of that number, JP? Like I say, almost as a news person or as somebody, you know, reacting to this stuff, it's almost like it's fell right in that middle ground where I don't think we're going to have an extreme reaction either way. You know, it's not like it was as poor as last week. It's not like it's the greatest Dynamite rate ever. You know, obviously that stat there about being the second lowest this year is a little bit alarming. But first on cable is first on cable. And I think maybe the conversation begins and ends there.
And that'll be what they'll be most interested in, is they'll be thinking number one on cable. They'll be thinking, you know, you've always got to think with the TV negotiations coming up for like 2024, that becomes a much bigger deal. However, Dynamite ratings have generally now fallen into this sort of 900,000 mark. There were times when we've spoken about what does it need to do to get up to a million, and it feels like that's a little bit away from it. And it feels like when they do enter these kind of lulls, it's like there's a much kind of, there's always like 100,000 people who are kind of willing to not kind of invest in it as much. And if you told me that a Dynamite that featured the debut of Kazuchika Okada was, you know, gonna not get this, was gonna end up with this type of a rating, I'd feel like sorely disappointed. I don't really have any extreme reactions to it like you. I just still think it's disappointing. I think it's still falling, you know, this is not really the kind of, it's not really a good sign going into a pay-per-view, but then they've, you know, I don't think they'll be too upset about it as well at the same time. But for me, I it's still not a great number.
Tends to be kind of what we, you know, it is a bit of a pattern, you know, AEW Dynamite doing a slightly, and I say slightly low number the week before pay-per-views. I don't know what it is about the audience that kind of, you know, causes that pattern to emerge, but it is a thing that's been noted. So I don't necessarily, you know, draw a lot from that. It's one of them. I mean, you know, looking at, like, you know, mentioning post-wrestling, you know, our good friend Brandon over there, who's going to be joining me and Martin Bushby on our live stream next month. I'm looking forward to picking his brain and asking some questions of him. But you can see, you know, from Twitter, and I've got my DMs open there, which is never a good sign.
over on there. Hello.
I'm scared about what was in there then. Hopefully nothing too bad.
Rewind it back.
Yeah, he was looking at, you know, the P2, you know, which is the overall audience of the 1849. You know, you can see the pattern there, obviously, with last week's number coming in particularly low there for Dynamite. This is kind of a rebound as an overall number to the range of where we were, and then if you look at the 1849, obviously a big dip there for last week and a slight rebound, so still a little bit of a concern there. But yeah, it's I don't know, it's one of them. It's, I think if it was 100,000 lower, or, you know, the demo was worse than it is, even though it is a slightly disappointing demo, I think I'd be a little bit more panicked than I am. But yeah, I think next week's number is going to be the big one. You know, Blood and Guts,
yeah,
you know, is something they're doing a big amount of promotion for, having to promote that at the same time as Forbidden Door, I think is maybe slightly part of some of the issues I had with this week's show as well. But you know, that should be a big Dynamite. That should draw a big number. If it doesn't, then maybe we need to consider things. But yeah, I think that's probably going to be the telltale sign of where we are right now.
I think it's going to be next week is really the big one. You mentioned there about blood and guts. What is he going to do? And it's kind of impossible to put predictions up on these types of things. I don't think it's going to do anything more than about 930 personally on that. But what I would hope for it as a show is, once Forbidden Door's out of the way, it could be more focused on the story, on some of the storylines for once. Or are we going to be lost up in a myriad of other titles and all the rest of it? That's it's what direction it goes in post this. Because once you get Blood and Guts out of the way, really, in theory, you've kind of got a clean slate storyline wise, haven't you? For like,
they need
to want to head towards All In. They need it. Yeah.
Because obviously we'll get into, you know, again, we don't usually do this on the weekend show, but it is a pay-per-view weekend, so we're going to get into our thoughts on Dynamite as a whole. And that was one big thing that stood out for me. You know, Andy says here in the Patreon chat, obviously, you know, they're having a hard enough time doing their own stories, and with New Japan and talent thrown in, it's a bit messy. But like I say, you add Blood and Guts to that, that makes it messier. Like, there was a point on this week's show where they cut backstage to Jay Lethal to cut a promo to build up like some ROH TV title nonsense. So I was like, lads, yous have got enough. Like, let's just wait a week, you know? And that's kind of how I feel a little bit about, you know, the Christian stuff, which was like a highlight of this week's show. There is a part of me that's like, could we not have done this like in a couple of weeks? Could we not have done it like and given it like its own focus? There is such a thing, I think, in television in general, of doing a TV show or telling, you know, a story, or, you know, doing anything really, a movie, where you can do too much. You know, you can not give individual things enough time to breathe or enough importance, you know, within the scope of the show. Like you mentioned, you know, Okada debuting on this show. It wasn't like the Ospreay one, you know, as bad as I felt that was, but it was like, you know, it was a big deal. Okada's here, they made the big deal of it, and then it was to the back and we had to do something else, and it was like, oh, come on, lads, like let's do this at the end of the show. Give us some time to soak this story in. I wonder if they can help themselves, you know, when it comes to future weeks, even without the New Japan pay-per-view. I'm sure Tony Khan will find, you know, 14 other things to do on a show. It's just kind of how he books. Maybe we've just got to get used to it. But I mean, yeah, I mean, before we get to, I suppose, the Forbidden Door stuff, I mentioned it there, you know, what did you make of the big Christian angle? I think Gareth shocked a lot of people on Twitter, coming out as a big Christian fan. I always knew he would be. So Christian felt like a Gareth kind of wrestler. Always surprised me he was on my side of history when it came to Christian, which allegedly is the wrong side of history, if you believe our mate Matty Edwards. But I'll go with Gareth on it. I thought it was a particularly strong segment. You know, I'm not a Christian fan, but I thought his delivery was absolutely fantastic. The little things he was doing, like the look at the camera he gave when Luchasaurus came out, and the kind of backtracking he did when he was there compared to what he was saying. His promo was great. The content of the promo was great. Didn't love the stuff about Jungle Boy's dad. I think just wasn't needed. You know, I felt like the promo was mean enough already without making us all feel a bit grimy and dirty with that. But that minor point aside, yeah, there's a smarmy, you know, veteran bad guy who, by the way, threw a few barbs in there at MJF and some of the other younger members of the roster that felt like maybe it had touched the nerve with Christian there to talk about MJF being unhappy about, you know, getting paid less than certain ex-WWE guys, one of which is probably Christian. He did a great job of channeling that into his promo as well, and I thought it was a killer segment, really. Just a well done all round.
Yeah, it was great. It'd be even better if it was happening a week from now. And I'm quite looking forward to the build-up for this, because you're hoping that this is going to... This should be something you're focusing in at All In, shouldn't you? Like, this should be like how far they've spent this long telling the story. So I wasn't really surprised that he could cut that kind of a promo, to be honest with you. It's been a while and he's done it before. I just kind of liked the character motivations, the idea of playing on the idea. You thought I was going to come back here and help a lot of the young guys get over. Like, it was wonderfully smarmy for it. The Luchasaurus stuff is where I kind of like go, oh, okay, I'm not too sure about it. But,
I'd never considered it as an idea that Luchasaurus could turn and be like his dopey monster. I think that's better than a wrestling dinosaur. Do you not think? I feel like that's a better use of it.
If he unmasked, yeah, obviously. But like, I'm not sure if that would be the case. My thinking on them bringing up his dad is they're going to be if this is going to be the evolution of Jungle Boy into Jungle Jack Perry. Then they're going to start playing up on who Luke Perry is, isn't it? Like, and like, as bad as this is, I wouldn't be surprised if when you see in the build-up, there'll be some sort of package where it shows Luke Perry going to watch like Jungle Boy at PWG or something along those lines. So it's going to be worked in. Now, my fear for this is I'm like, and I know my head shouldn't go there, is like the kind of Big Show, bloody Big Boss Man kind of stuff when they start to bring us in here. Like, I don't think we're going down that direction.
I hope not.
For the love of Christ, they're not doing that. But I'm intrigued in this, whereas I was kind of tired of it. I mean, they could have done this a while ago, really, but it should be interesting. And then, you know, if ultimately if this ends up with, you know, them doing some sort of really brutal match in order to show that Jungle Boy can wrestle like kind of harder and bleed and all the rest of it, then that's what they'll end up doing. And I'm sure it'll be a lot of fun along the way. So yeah, for me, it was a highlight on the show.
Definitely. It really was. And yeah, I guess we'll see if they go there. Vince Russo depths with the story. But yeah, James has said here in the Patreon title, Luchasaurus is a Tyson combo. Tyson Tomko 2K22. I'd take that, Tomko.
Oh yeah,
that could be his name. Yeah, as Darren said as well. Like, I enjoyed the comparisons of like Edge's "you people" kind of promos. Christian veered into it, but didn't go all the way. Yeah, maybe this time, maybe me and Gareth can become Christian guys, and I think Matty will be particularly proud if that does happen. But no, great segment. You know, placement maybe scratched my head a little bit, but that aside, it was probably, to be honest, the strongest thing on the show. I mean, getting into the, I suppose that's the lone kind of major non-Forbidden Door thing going on, other than, you know, the little bits of build up to Blood and Guts as well, which we can get into. But as Ivan said here in the Patreon chat, obviously, yeah, Okada turning up unadvertised. He says here, got a great pop, but it was more a relief pop than anything. And Danielson not naming his placements is probably going to lead to overpromising on a debut again. Yeah, it was... that segment was... That had me scratching my head. I felt like, you know, we're in a moment where AEW and this build to this pay-per-view doesn't really have much goodwill. And it felt like Danielson started really strong, you know, having him come out and, you know, talk about, you know, the fact that he, you know, the way he was talking about, you know, we can read books and run around and joke. It was basically, I've got a concussion. It's basically what he said in not so many words. You know, but I'm fine, or will be fine, is the way he worded it. All of that stuff was great. You know, great talk of Danielson. Like, remember those fucking days when people like to pretend he wasn't a great talker? Like, he is. He's fantastic. That was all great. But then the Adam deliver, like, it was the negative side of it, which was, yeah, so, you know, obviously I can't make the pay-per-view and I can't make Blood and Guts. That was all fine. But the idea that, like, he's not going to announce who it is that's going to be facing Zack Sabre Jr., that immediately, like, ends the promo on a bit of a downer, puts him in a really awkward position. It felt deflating in the room. And then the decision to have Zack come out... Zack Sabre Jr., by the way, who is one of the few people in New Japan who can cut a relatively high-level English language promo, come out and just shout a bit and not get a microphone at any point, massively perplexing for me. Like, I don't really, you know, if you're not someone who's, you know, aware of, you know, New Japan over the last few years, don't know what you'd make of Zack Sabre Jr. If you are aware, I think you'd be hoping for Zack Sabre Jr. to cut one of his promos. Instead, he was just... skinny British lad in the trackie at the top of the rampway, and, you know, a pay-per-view that probably needs one more big match to be announced goes with a mystery match. You know, Tony Khan loves a good mystery man. I mean, there's benefits of that and positives of that, and if it's somebody great, you know, I'm sure we'll love it on the night. But I don't know, I felt like we needed something a little bit more concrete to kick off Dynamite here.
Yeah, I would have liked that. I mean, I thought the way it was going was quite good. I wasn't surprised when it's a case of not the announcement. I just thought to myself, okay, who are the possible options for this? Cesaro would be the one that would kind of scream out from a number of reasons. I still think Johnny Gargano would possibly be an option. And I think William Regal himself, if they tried to work him in. I know that may sound a bit daft, but I wouldn't say that would be entirely like that unsurprising if they did something along those lines. Beyond that, I can't really see who else they would bring in. There's other excellent wrestlers who could come in and have a kind of very good technical wrestling match. It's just that none of them have the star presence. And by that, I mean a Timothy Thatcher or a Biff Busick. You know, it's a case where you probably are going to have to deliver on Cesaro, but then we end up in a situation, right, does that mean Cesaro's now part of Blackpool Combat Club, which I never feel comfortable saying. It's another new person.
Like, not everything is like, you know, it's like that fucking, you know, when you were kids, you got it drummed into the puppies, not just for Christmas. Like, you know, yeah. It'd be that cool if Cesaro came in. It'd be a great moment. You know, it'd be great for Blood and Guts too, probably. You've then got a book. He's another upper mid card. You've got a book. You know, it's like when they brought this new title belt in. Yeah. It was like, okay, I don't agree, but you know, the logic is we want a tournament to build up this pay. No, you've made the decision now that it's going to affect AEW forever. They've now got another belt forever. That's what worries me. It's, you know, I tie that in with, you know, some of the use of talent over the last while. It's like another new character coming in. You know, it's probably the last thing AEW needs. But if it is Cesaro, I think, you know, he gets a big pop. It'll be a big moment to a lot of people. You know, yeah, Yuzara Hart, our friend on the public YouTube, says the only thing that make my head explode more than Danielson being out is if they add William Regal. I've heard that talk, that Regal could be the guy for the match. I mean,
I'm not saying I want to see this at all. Go back and listen to the Patreon show that we did about
we roll around
his best matches.
It could happen, you know. But yeah, you know, other than that, you know, getting into that as a possibility, as you say. The other possibilities, what are they? You know, it could be Gresham. That could fit the talk that Daniel said about being a great technical guy, but doesn't quite fit Blood and Guts. You know, past that, I can't really see past that. I can't see anyone else, especially with Tony on the conference call tonight, you know, talking her up as a big deal and a big name. I know he's got form for doing that and it maybe not living up to everyone's expectations, but I think there's a flaw to this, you know, announcement. It's not, as much as I'd enjoy it, it's not going to be Tim Thatcher, you know, it's not going to be, you know, someone of that level. I think it's Cesaro or bust, which does make me question why they haven't announced it. Maybe they haven't got it, you know, the ink is still wet on the paper or whatever, or maybe Tony just loves the surprises, but I can't see past that. Is there any, like, secondary type person in seriousness you can think of?
There isn't. The only other one I mentioned is Gargano, and I don't seriously think it would be him.
Yeah,
he doesn't really make that much sense.
Doesn't fit the technical wrestler side of it, does he? Like,
not really, but it's an option. Like, it's
Joe's an option. Could be Joe. Like, Joe would.
Joe. But I doubt. Yeah, is he filming? Is he not away filming or something at the moment, or something along those lines? So, like, you know, I really don't know. To be honest, I mean, Cesaro. When you say Cesaro or bust, I can't think of like anyone else they would bring in, unless they did something like mad from an angle perspective. I just don't. I'd love it. I don't see them doing that at all. The only other one would, like, and I did hear it suggested, is if you did something like Turner Daniel Garcia, or try and bring in like a Lee Moriarty, and you try and maybe build someone up that way. But that would be disappointing. And if Garcia did it, it'd be like, what? This doesn't make any sense. You're just sort of turning him for the sake of turning him to have these matches then. So Cesaro is the only one. It's just that then what do you do with him afterwards?
Probably, I mean, there is a story there to be told. You know, if he comes in and Danielson puts him in, Kingston, you know, who's got this, you know, long
time. Yeah.
Is it a shoot? Is it a work? Who knows? Feud with Cesaro. It fits in there, you know, and that they could tell a story after that. But yeah, you know, Ivan says, yeah, does Zack Sabre have to win if you plan on doing the Danielson match in AEW again? I think that's, the surprise usually wins, though. That's the other questionable thing on this. And Zack can probably take a loss. I think he probably loses, to be honest. But yeah, like Darren says, Cesaro fits the feud of Brian and Eddie. So again, that's the lead one for me. And yeah, as Ben says here, you know, Gresham's already had his debut, and Claudio fits the BCC as the tie-in. Just got to be Claudio, hasn't it? Like, I can't see any other scenario unless like something goes really wrong. I think it's him.
Exactly. You're bringing up, like, I often feel like I'm having to search around for names, not for any real reason other than to say someone else other than Cesaro. But that would be, I'd be shocked if that isn't the case.
It is Tony Khan after all.
Backstage happy.
He is a man who, like, on the same Dynamite as we get into the Forbidden Poor build, did decide, you know, he didn't have a wrestler on his 150 wrestler roster who could take a loss to Hangman Page, so he brought in Silas Young. Like,
why?
On its face, like, I'm not gonna. I think I saw Suit Williams say this, and I see where Suit was coming from. Look, Silas came in, lost, left. Not the end of the world. It isn't, but it is another. It is like, yeah. Again, it's like I keep making the point of, like, if your favorite TV show introduced this many characters in such a short frame of time, we're already like, you know, it's not even learning who these people are. It's just getting invested in all these different people. Throw another one out of why don't you are at it. I also thought he did get too much offense in the match, but, you know, it's not going to kill Hangman Page. You know, it was a dynamite match that was of a reasonable, you know, 3.25, you know, star standard that none of us are going to remember in a few weeks. But it still made me laugh when I saw the graphic out there that Silas Young had got himself an AEW book and, you know, hometown hero or not. But yeah, it was mainly there, as we all thought, for the Angle post match, which this Adam Cole, Jay White stuff continued on, and here comes Kazuchika Okada, who got a great response for his first appearance in AEW. You know, I think overall, I think you got to be happy with that. He came across like a star. Came across a little bit awkward because you kind of forget that, oh yeah, they don't do these types of angles much in Japan, do they? So didn't seem to really know where to stand. I think our mate Ian made that point on Twitter about that. But like, he did look a little bit awkward, but came across as a star. You know, I don't love the match, but it's an injection of star power that this show needed. So overall, I'll take it. Little bit underwhelmed with the fact that we're going to a four-way, but I think I'm just going to thank my lucky stars that it isn't a three-way or, you know, something else. I think we've gotten there. The way we've gotten there has been very confusing. I still don't really understand the logic of, you know, Jay White basically saying Adam Cole and Hangman Page aren't good enough to get title shots, and then Okada comes and then everyone gets title shots, and then, you know, the story being Okada's not coming, and then he comes. Don't really understand that either. It just feels a bit, you know, like they've been throwing shit at a wall over the last few weeks to try and make sense of this. But we've ended up with the match, you know, like I say, bit of star power for the show, JP, if maybe not in the way that I would have personally expected Okada to be used.
Yeah, it's not exactly the classic IWGP big title match you'd be expecting on a show like this in some ways. I was just looking at it now, just thinking, imagine you could just have White and Page for the IWGP title and just Okada and Cole. You just think immeasurably for me, like, I think then you can still have a lot of those kind of moments. Obviously, as I've said earlier, and I'm not a fan of the way that they debuted him in here, but I would completely agree that it is that element of star power that you really need from there.
Like, credibility,
you know, it is credibility, because you're not going to have Naito as well, because isn't he out with an eye injury as well? So like you need all hands on deck. So if you had to have a card there, it's just wanting to see him being debuted in another way. But I mean, I always thought it was really encouraging the way that the crowd had a really big pop for him, and I'm sure the match itself, like when we talk about it as a card, will be fine, but it's not the best use of these people. Or the best way to get there.
That's it. And it's, yeah, I off the top of my head, you know, considering it was teased as well, Hangman Okada, just do that. You know, could have spent the last few weeks just building up a bit more heat for Adam Cole and Jay White. Maybe they could have had a match. I know it's heel versus heel, but I still prefer it. You know, then you've got two relatively prestigious single matches added to, you know, card that still doesn't feel like it has, you know, absolute tippy top level singles match as good as, you know, Tanahashi and Moxley is. Yeah, it's just, yeah, not the match I would have booked, but better than the tag and better than Okada not being there. So
yeah,
I'll take it in some form. But yeah, I suppose the other quick stuff from Dynamo before we get into the full card. Obviously they did the six man tag with Ospreay and Aussie opening it, Orange Cassidy and Roppongi Vice. Ospreay and Orange Cassidy's interactions were fun in the match. One too many of them, if they, you know, it's supposed to be special. We're seeing them opposite each other in the ring at the weekend. But you know, is what it is. I think that's another one. I think, you know, and Ospreay's outright said it on Twitter, I don't think that's the prestigious match that you give a Will Ospreay in a big pay-per-view like this. Again, don't think it was Tony's first call, but as a secondary call, I still don't think it's a particularly good call. Will they deliver in ring, though? Probably. Will it be that one of those Orange Cassidy matches where, oh, he does the shake, and then we get 15 minutes of a great match, like the pack stuff? Probably, but you know, still not exactly excited about the prospect of it going in, and I'm not sure the interactions here, as fun as they were, really changed my mind on that.
Yeah, same here. I mean, I thought to myself, like, in terms of match quality, I think Aussie Open, I think, have been a bit of a actually sort of carried themselves really well on here. I know that they're the pin eaters in all of this because they haven't got that kind of big enough name, but I always think they've stood out with a lot of the kind of their style of offense.
It's just occurred to me. They're giving all this TV time to them. They're not on the show. They've been all over Dynamite and Rampage for weeks. Where have Cobb and the other knob have been?
They're not even really in New Japan, when you think about it. They've been in New Japan more than this. But, you know, again, good for them. But you're like, you're better off, you're more likely to see them in Rev Pro for the most part. But yeah, I mean, I think with a lot of the problem I have with this match is, you mentioned back to the Pat match, the reason why the Pat match worked is that was the first time Orange Cassidy had done in terms of the stick, that was his debut. That was kind of the novelty. That's not going to be the same here, and it's a waste for what you could have out of Will Ospreay, given the number of potential kind of opponents you could have from any number of factions. It feels like it's a waste, but it's also the fact that it's like, yeah, but he can beat Orange Cassidy, and it's like, that shouldn't be a concern for this as well, because surely anyone who loses in these kind of big matches, if you're a big name, well, then you want to have a rematch. No, that's kind of how promoting 101, like, that's the idea, that like, if that's something that's played into it as well, as like, it's kind of an opponent for him to kind of lose to, it's like, ugh.
Well, other major stuff on the show, what did you make of the go home at the end, Jericho and Lance Arch against Moxley and Tanahashi? Tag team partners, who will they get along? Won't they get along? I feel like I've seen that before. But, oh well, you know, if you're that deathly afraid of letting Tanahashi talk, I suppose this is a route to build the match. Again, Lance Archer's another one. You know, he's in the mix here without a major match on the pay-per-view. But I think the match itself was pretty throwaway. It was the post-match, which was, I don't know, most notable and probably the best summation of AEW right now, in that, like, in a way, actually, there was a positive there. They never leave themselves enough time for the main events and after the main events. You know, they gave themselves too much time on this one, and we were left with, as Darren said here, Mox and Tana stood in the ring. Are they still there to this day? They might be, but poor Tanahashi having to, you know, having to gain it at Moxley over and over for 4 minutes while there was a chaotic brawl going on the outside, and Suzuki might as well have just turned up in a pajamas for how fast he was for, you know, whatever the shit show of a match he's building for the weekend, as the lads built brawled around the outside. Just too much happening, I would say, for you go. It was like two ideas merged into one. They probably didn't want to be merged into one, you know, and then we ended up with what we got, and then it went, you know, for its ends, it went definitely at least 2 minutes too long. It was kind of the comical by the end of it, really, rather than
it was comical
for the pay-per-view.
I was just wondering, what are Moxley and Tanahashi saying to each other? Mm. How are they not corpsing at this point 2 minutes in, or just getting bored of the sight of each other, just as they were trying to tell angles for, what, 2-3 different matches all at the same time? Imagine watching a TV program with two simultaneous endings. That's like, when you look at it like that, that's a daft thing to try and do, like, to do a definitive one. And that's how this felt. It just felt like you said, it was a summation of a lot of the issues that we've had of this as a TV show.
Yeah, that's it. You know, the EWR booker, and we can see where he was coming from when, you know, and trying to do it, but, you know, it just didn't really come off. Matty's just jumped in the chat, by the way. Yeah, I've missed the Christian chat. Rewind a few minutes, Matty, you'll hear me heap some praise on your hero there. But yeah, Andy says it was like that Noah match where they stared at each other. Hope she's all right, by the way, JP.
Cheers. It was a hell of a cough. She's like a day behind me in the illness stakes.
Oh, hopefully she'll be all right by the weekend.
We
send our hopes and prayers. But speaking of hopes and prayers, should we get into this card then? I don't think there's much else to say, is there, from unless you had any other Dynamite thoughts other than that final build.
I thought it was slightly better than the week before, but it's still like a convoluted mess.
I will say that, actually, no, I'm glad you said that. As a standalone show, if I wasn't, you know, a podcaster who's, or just a wrestling fan who can't help but analyze, you know, the build and the story and the week to week, if you just sat me in front of this as a standalone show, I probably, you know, and overall, I had a good time. It wasn't like what you were, you know, at a loss for things happening, you know, that is the, but it's good or bad, a big thing about AEW. The matches were fine to strong, you know. I did love the Aussie Open and Ospreay six man as a match, even if it didn't do much for my interest in the pay per view. Didn't really mention it, but Pentagon and Malakai Black, even if there were a few communication issues there, as there often will be with Pentagon, that was a fun enough match as well. You know, it felt big, it felt newsworthy. Didn't do the best possible job, I think, of building the pay per view. It all felt a little, you know, a bit little too late, but. You know, there is that, and as Ivan said, he just says he doesn't like the El Dorado invading EastEnders comparison. As him and his brother used to fancy book Neighbours versus Home and Away. Now that's an interpromotional show we could get into. That's the real Forbidden Door, JP. How's that gonna happen, Jeff?
That is the real Forbidden Door. Is Neighbours and Home and Away, isn't it? It's if you turned up on one from the other, that's just like that'd be like, I don't know, if Toadie had turned up on Home and Away or something, it'd be like when Flair turned up on WWF TV in like 91. Just like mad shit.
We'll hopefully one day see that. There's still time, even if Channel 5 are still not doing the funding. Is that what happened? When did they stop funding it or something like that?
I don't know if it was just they were a choice on sort of on the Australian side. Yeah, it's disappointing. Like, you know, Guy Pearce came back for it as well. A lot of the big guns have come back for it. I must confess, I'm going to have to watch that final week of it for old time's sake. And Plain Jane Superbrain.
Oh, well, we'll do that. Do that chat. Maybe that'll be a deep cut.
Yes,
we'll do on the Patreon side. But yeah, we should get into what's happening at the weekend before we get into Forbidden Door itself. There is the small matter of Rampage later tonight. JP, very quickly, Rey Fénix versus Andrade is on that show, which is the basically Tony Khan said on the conference call today, literally happening because those lads can't wait the pay per view, which I still don't really understand. You know, primarily AEW contracted talent. Why does it matter where they work in Mexico? Whatever, doesn't want to upset New Japan.
Need to fuck off CMLL.
Yeah,
absolutely. Waste of time.
Mercedes Martinez and Serena Deeb against Lainey Luck and Sierra. The DKC versus Hook. You can confirm or deny he's a real person. And Cash Wheeler versus Jeff Cobb. That makes up Rampage tonight, JP.
Yep. Cash Wheeler, Jeff Cobb looks interesting. DKC, he's the proper New Japan strong young boy. Him and Kevin Knight. Like, again, I it could be a lot of fun for what it is. Slightly throwaway Rampage. But, yes, leading into what is obviously the main event of the weekend, AEW and New Japan present Forbidden Door from the United Center in Chicago, Illinois. I think they've sold about 15,000 tickets for this. So, on the buy-in, they've got Max Caster and the Gun Club, which is Austin, Billy, and Colton. So, yeah, Billy Gunn up against Alex Coughlin, Kevin Knight, the DKC, Yuya Yamura.
How's DKC getting double booked this weekend? He's doing well out of this. Who's the gobshite in the New Japan Strong Lads who's tweeted his way out of a job? The one who's
Carl Fredericks,
the G1, he's definitely benefiting from the Carl Fredericks kickoff, isn't he? I will say though, like, I get the idea of we'll go through these one by one, but like going through this, like the buy-in first, I would have expected there to be more buy-in matches. Maybe we'll get more announced over the weekend. I think I saw a spoiler without ruining Rampage that maybe there is one other match from Rampage that'd get added. I mean, I feel like this might have been a spot I'd have thrown in Aussie Open. You know, maybe there'll be like that match or one of the other matches thrown on the buy-in rather than giving the young lads an outing. But, you know, I'm always happy when Max Caster and the Gun Club get a booking.
They're kind of fun, aren't they? It shows where they are positioned in the terms of the realm of AEW. I mean, they kind of really like them and they get reactions. They are the kind of thing that is going to pop that kind of live crowd. I'm surprised Hook isn't on the buy-in as well. I would have thought that they might have him versus.
Sorry, I just noticed from Ben's comments here and I didn't catch that. Billy Gunn's in the match.
Yeah.
I can count.
Because Andy Bowens is injured. Four and four.
He is New Japan legend. Billy Gunn wears Yoshitatsu. That's news to me. I think I missed that in the graphic.
Why? Look, within the context of this, it's fine. It's a buy-in show match. I'd still think you'd want a work rate type thing on there as well. Otherwise, I'm assuming the buy-in will be what will end up being probably a tremendous countdown to Forbidden Door video package that's just a month out of date. The kind of thing that they should have just been showing on a loop week on week.
Well, there is that the special, isn't it, the Road to, apparently. They're always very good then, but it's not coming till after Rampage, so it might be a little bit late. But yeah, as Ben said here, Tony Khan and I said there will be more matches announced tonight.
Are we going winners and losers on this one? What do you reckon?
I assume Max Caster and the lads, because it's the Nightmare Boys. But Matty said here, he just take the one Billy Gunn on a big cross promotional pay per view that doesn't involve the TNA. There you go. Was Billy Gunn on Invasion? I don't think he was. Was he injured or something at the time? Don't remember him having a match on Invasion. Because that'd be a great stat, that, if he was the one man who worked Invasion and Forbidden Door. Matty can tell us in the chat if we're missing something there, but love it.
Jericho
wasn't around for the Invasion, was he? I don't know what he was doing.
Oh, did he bug it off at that time? Oh, I've forgotten all about that. Well, yeah, I'm with you, Max Caster and the Gun Club winning that one. Zack Sabre Jr. versus, are we both saying Cesaro?
I wonder where this will be on the main show as we get into the main show there. Yeah, I think it's Cesaro, and I think as we said earlier, I think Cesaro goes over in the situation, especially if you're going to Blood and Guts. Yeah, don't have another call on that. I think it's got to be him.
Yeah, definitely think so, and I think he's going over as well.
Oh, AEW says, Billy Gunn was on Invasion and a six-man tag. There you go. He's done two six-man tags, Invasion. We're the first to crack that. I hope no one else has stolen that fact. There you go.
Oh, wow. He truly is the one, Billy Gunn, isn't he? AEW Women's World Title match, Thunder Rosa versus Toni Storm. It's again, this exists in a complete silo. It doesn't feel like it's a part of this at all, but I think they wanted to put a women's match on the show. So this is the one that they've done. And I don't necessarily think it's the worst kind of build to it necessarily, that at least they're trying to do something with Toni Storm, but I can't see any other solution other than Thunder Rosa winning.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't love the match. Like, you've made much better arguments for who Thunder Rosa, could face on here, whether they could have. I know it's a really easy point to make. Could have done something with Stardom or whatever. Definitely feels out of place. Although I thought Toni Storm looked good on Dynamite this week, and she's been looking pretty good in the run-up. Wouldn't shock me if this was a sleeper very good match. Can't say my interest level's high just because it's a bit out of place, but I reckon we'll come out of it going, 3.75 to 4 stars or so. I think that might might be where I rate it. I think Thunder Rosa wins. I don't think they're going to go to Toni Storm, but, I think it's not impossible.
No, I could see Toni Storm over in Japan soon enough. I could see her going over there to do something in Stardom. Like, that feels like, they've got a lot of big shows coming up in July in particular. So it feels like her going and doing that would make a bit more sense for me. But yeah, like you, Thunder Rosa. IWGP United States Heavyweight Title match, Will Ospreay versus Orange Cassidy. One, this, isn't it?
Yeah, I think Ospreay goes over. Yeah. Obviously being US champion and Rev Pro champion. But I think I do, like I say, I'm Orange Cassidy, like when we did our it wasn't Forbidden Door at the time, or maybe we did call it that, when we did our show over on Steph's YouTube channel, me, Andrew, SP3 and Steph, and did our predictions. I think all four of us, I'm pretty sure, had Yano versus Orange Cassidy on our cards. That's where we all slotted in Orange Cassidy. I know Tony Khan, he mentioned on the conference call today, he's a draw. He sees him as a higher level on that. I think AEW hardcore fans in general do see Orange Cassidy as, bigger than we do. Still, doesn't feel like it's a big enough match for Ospreay on a pay-per-view. But yeah, if he's there to do anything else other than lose, I'd be shocked.
If you're... Okay, so they're up against New Japan. You don't think of New Japan for its comedy stylings. It's not that kind of promotion, and it's going to draw people in. It's still fundamentally built in on a kind of work rate aspect of like the best wrestling in the world is the kind of brand name that it built up for itself. Orange Cassidy does not fit into that mold. As good a character as he may be, as entertaining as he is, he doesn't fall into that. But yeah,
we'll give it 4 stars at this least one. Though. It's Ospreay, we've got a big match, isn't it? Of course we will. And it's Orange Cassidy does deliver in these spots.
In isolation, this probably, I'm not saying this is going to be a bad show, but it's not ultimately going to be as good as it could have been. And it may not have that kind of long-term goodwill for the kind of ticket sales they did on there before. We've got Bullet Club, El Fantasmo, Hikaleo, and the Young Bucks versus dudes with attitudes. I know. Darby Allin, Sting, Hiromu Takahashi, and Shingo.
Like, let's start with the positive. That's fucking cool. Yeah. The dudes with attitudes. Yeah. Firstly, doing that name. That's cool as fuck, Tony Khan, WWE fan. I mean, the real dudes with attitudes for me were Shawn Michaels and Diesel, but, you know, I'll let it go. I also like the other dudes with attitudes, you know. Sting Squadron was right there too, but I suppose, you know, Blood and Guts is around the corner. Maybe save it for a Sting-involved Blood and Guts. Darby Allin, Hiromu, Shingo and Sting being a team is really... Like, Shingo and Sting as a team, Shingo. Like, who thought we'd ever come to that day? That's cool. Nah. Kind of feel like, you know, you could have done Hiromu versus Darby and had a relatively prestigious big card singles match there that, again, pretty much all of us have on our card on the YouTube show we did last year, but all right, let that go. Feel like Shingo could maybe have a prestigious match, you know, when we get to the four-way that Ishii's not in anymore. Maybe he could have gone in there. Maybe he could have had a singles match against the Miro or somebody, or, you know, somebody else, you know, a pack. That would have been a great singles match, wouldn't it? But anyway, cool team, even if on Dynamite. A really odd way to debut, by the way. Shingo and Hiromu, just in a graphic. And you're supposed to just know who these people are. But okay. Yeah. What I really don't get, though, is that other team. Like, I mean, I assume this is massively affected by injuries. You've got to imagine Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish were figured in here. Because Matt Jackson and Nick Jackson, the Young Bucks, coming back to Bullet Club should be a big deal. But the fact that the team with El Fantasmo and Hikaleo, like, could you get lower on the totem pole when it comes to Bullet Club? I suppose LP's got a bit of cachet, but fuck me, is that a random-ass team or a random way to shoehorn the Bucks back in? I feel like with Shingo and Hiromu, there had to be a better spot for the Bucks on this card than this.
There is. It'll be loads of fun. And... yeah, exactly. There'll be fun and there'll be novel interactions. And I expect that. I expect there to be some funny moments. However, you're not going to be left with like kind of classic moments. It's just sort of like they are going to be feel like rather fleeting. And this as well, like you can tell, obviously, this is where you get into like the kind of injuries being ravaged. But it's also the haphazard way we get to it. It's again, no assumption of who Hiromu and who Shingo is or why they're being kind of thrown into this. It'll be fun, but all of these people could be involved in something a lot more interesting.
Agreed.
And then you've got...
I'll have a laugh. Mm. I will absolutely have a laugh live. I think this is the most I will enjoy the show. I think there's a million logistical reasons why I hate it as a match. But I love Shingo and Sting being on the same team. Hiromu and Darby are going to have some fun interactions, and we're all going to be going, Hiromu versus Darby when? It should have been here. It's not.
Yeah.
But, you know, at least it wasn't Good Brothers, as Darren has said there. But, yeah, I mean, even Despy versus Allen, if you're going to throw Despy on a random Dynamite, there you go. Despy versus Darby Allen, take that. What's the expression? The sum of its parts, like the individual parts of this are all, like, you know, golden, apart from El Fantasmo and Hikaleo. It's just, you know, you're putting a lot of... Oh, give me an analogy, JP. You're putting a lot of eggs in a basket. You put a lot of, like, I don't know. You're putting 10 pound coins in a bag and come out with a fiver. I don't know. Something like that.
It does feel like that, doesn't it? It really is much less than the sum of its parts for it as well. And Hikaleo's there to eat the pin. Like, I would be astounded if anybody else does on that as well. But yeah, it's just plain old weird, but I fully expect dudes with attitudes to win. A phrase I didn't think I'd hear myself saying in 2022. Next up, we've got another wacky build to quite a weird six-man. You've got Eddie Kingston, Shota Umino, and Wheeler Yuta versus the Jericho Appreciation Society, Chris Jericho and Sammy Guevara. Oh, and Minoru Suzuki.
Ridiculous match. Like, absolutely ridiculous match. If Chris Jericho, based on an interview he did this week, didn't want to face Minoru Suzuki because he thought Minoru Suzuki had faced too many mid-carters, tell him to fuck off. Like, that was your obvious match. If you weren't going to do that match, I feel like, I don't even want to see it, but Jericho versus Ospreay would have given this card a little bit of a kick, you know? Like, Kingston could have done a singles with somebody. I don't know, Shingo, Ishii, if he'd have been fit. Obviously, that didn't work out anyway.
Suzuki.
Suzuki, there you go. There's your match. Absolutely bizarre. The main event segment and Jericho's promo last week where he literally was like, oh, by the way, Shota Umino was in the match. Why Jericho got to choose, I don't know. Why Shota just turned up on Dynamite like you were supposed to know again, like you were supposed to know who he was. And I love his little thing with Moxley, but I feel like, you know, him and Moxley could have, you know, there could have been a more logical way of Moxley introducing him to the AEW product than just him being fucking shoved into this card, into this match. Just bizarre all round. And why is Sammy Guevara in the match and not Daniel Garcia? Like, I get that you've just added Sammy back to the group. Although, again, you could have done that on Blood and Fucking Guts. You could have done it then. Or you could have done it after Blood and Guts. Like, did we have to do it now? Daniel Garcia feels like a slightly better fit to team with Minoru Suzuki. I gave this Wheeler Yuta, Eddie Kingston, Shota Umino, but what do I know? This is the most random match on the card. Who wins? Who cares? Probably Jericho's team, because I assume the babyfaces are winning the Blood and Guts, but
I'm
not asked, to be honest. Like, this is just maybe it'll over-deliver, but it's probably the match I'm least interested in the card, again, considering the sum of its parts.
Yeah, be full of various bells and whistles, but what it won't have is the kind of, like, sort of specialness to it as well, because ultimately it feels like an AEW match with a couple of New Japan guys thrown in. And one of them isn't even really with New Japan proper, has been over with Rev Pro, being vaguely underwhelming. Neil,
the Global Wars card,
best
part
of like a couple of years.
That Andy did versus JP. Like, it's like,
yeah.
Should we have been careful? Like, you know, our criticism of them over the years, the Global Wars and War of the Worlds type stuff, maybe it actually was stronger than this.
Yeah, exactly. Though they did have a fair bit to them as well. At least you get to see a lot more singles matches. Next up, then, we've got a sort of winner takes all Ring of Honor World Tag Team Titles, IWGP Tag Team Titles, not the AAA Tag Titles, I might add. FTR, the Ring of Honor Tag Champions, Cash Wheeler and Dax Harwood versus United Empire, Great Khan and Jeff Cobb, who are the IWGP Tag Team Champions, versus Roppongi Vice.
What are they doing in this match? Like, why are they there? Like, it's not like we got the answer to everything. When we fantasy book cards last year, we all struggled to put, at the time it was Young Bucks against a good New Japan tag team, because most of them are like thrown together teams, or teams we're not really that interested in. FTR versus United Empire, you know, Cobb and O'Khan is a better match. You know, it may be not as, you know, the strongest team to put against FTR, but they are the fucking champions, so that's a match. Why? Again, Tony Khan's got this list of guys, you know, Orange Cassidy's at the top of the list, Trent's maybe, you know, a 1B in this list of guys he just fucking loves. Why is Trent Barretta in this match? Who is Rocky Romero? I keep asking that question. Like, who are you supposed to, like, believe he is if you only follow AEW? Like, what are they doing in this match? Like, it is just a complete... You subtract them by adding... by throwing them in there, it makes it feel less prestigious to me, less important. They're probably there to eat the pin, which is probably the answer to my own question here. But yeah, it's just, yeah, devalues the match, and I don't get it. I just don't get it. And actually, listening to Tony today, apparently the spot that the Trent occupied opposite Ospreay and then Six Mans, it was supposed to be CM Punk. So when CM Punk was injured, what did Tony do? Went, you know who we should put in this match? Trent Barretta. Like, why he loves him, I don't know, but he fucking loves him, and he's got himself a spot on the card. What can you do?
Yeah, if it was just FTR versus United Empire, I think it'd be a lot of fun. I think FTR are winning. I think, you know, given this, I think there's probably an idea that getting them over to Japan soon enough, it would fit in with what they would want to be doing themselves at some point, because he would have imagined as soon as they got released from WWE, it was like, right, we're going to end up in New Japan. But it's been a hell of a long wait because of the pandemic. But I think that they're going to be one of the teams coming in, sort of, you know, we'll see them at the end of the G1 or something along those lines. But yeah, I just hate this. It's like an unnecessary three-way where there just doesn't need to be a three-way. You could just have what is seen as being two of the best teams like up against each other. Something simple, God forbid.
Ben says here, he thinks Roppongi Vice will win it, gets the ROH belt off FTR for one.
Nah.
Maybe they're not pin eaters, maybe they're that could be the alternative. I hope not.
Yeah, bullshit their way around it. Ugh. Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I that's the problem, is that what do the Ring of Honor World Tag Team titles mean at this point in time? They're just other belts that they've got on a show to keep a brand alive, because we don't really know what's happening with it. But if your big plan is put it on Roppongi Vice, it's like, great. What a big idea that is. Speaking of big ideas, we've got the crowning of the first AEW All-Atlantic title in a four-way match. You know, we're all absolutely super pumped for this. We have Malakai Black versus Pac versus Miro versus late replacement for Tomohiro Ishii, Clark Connors. I like Clark Connors. Tomohiro Ishii means a lot abroad. I honestly think he means that. He means a lot in the US. He certainly means a lot in the UK. He's like kind of seen as a draw, frankly. Replacing him with Clark Connors for this. And again, I do like Clark Connors. Clark Connors should be in that opening buy-in match. Not involved in this.
If there was a situation that summed up everything about, you know, this story and about what's happened with this show, there's an injury, so can you be that mad about it? You know, logistically, this is just what they do, isn't it? This is what New Japan do. You know, it's going to be the guy who was in the final against Ishii. It's not going to be like they're going to pull a Hail Mary and fly Naito over. It's going to be the logistic, you know, it's going to be the runner-up in a sporting kind of way. That makes sense. Why was he the runner-up, though? Like, why did New Japan get so little of this tournament there? Who was the other court semi-finalist? Was it Honma and someone else? Like,
Kanemaru.
That's why maybe Ishii should have faced somebody who maybe was worth a fuck in this main event. Sorry, in the final of their side of the brackets. Like, yeah, it's super disappointing. what's this? God bless all.
Who's winning this?
Yeah, I mean, it's just not Clark Connors, mate. But Malakai, but again, this card.
Of that, I'm certain.
Even if Ishii was available, was a four-way the premium use of Ishii? No. Was a four-way the premium use of Malakai Black, Pac, or Miro? Could you have done Miro Ishii? Could you have done Pac Shingo? Could you have done fucking Malakai Black against fucking Osprey? Yes, 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 and yes. Like, it's their own. The injury is not their fault. Everything else is, and it sums this card.
Oh yeah, the title certainly is. That didn't magic itself up. Like that you've summed it up perfectly for that. In terms of who's going to win it, fuck knows. I'll say Miro for a laugh.
Maybe Pac. I'll go Pac. International title, put it on international man.
Why not? Shit or bust. Then for the IWGP World Heavyweight Title 4-way match, Jay White versus Kazuchika Okada versus Adam Cole versus Adam Page. This feels like deja vu, mate, from like a minute ago.
Yeah, we talked this one at length already.
We did.
It is what it is. I don't love the match. I would prefer two singles. And I can't see any other situation other than, I think Jay White retains and Adam Cole is there to eat the pin. Maybe New Japan or New Japan and WH Park will be proven right. And Okada wins the belt right back from Jay White, and he's just that transitional champion, and he's there to drop the belt right back to Okada again. I don't see it, though. I think it's attention for him, and like I say, the reason Adam Cole's in there is so that Adam Page doesn't have to lose, and it's so Okada doesn't have to lose, and I would just say to that, stop being a fucking coward and, you know, book Hammond in a way where he can lose a match like this. Whatever.
And finally, in the nominal main event, the interim AEW world title match doesn't need to exist there at all. Hiroshi Tanahashi versus Jon Moxley, which is Jon Moxley's going to win. Spoiler.
I haven't done many star rating predictions for this. 4.25 is my prediction for this one. It'll be good.
I'd say so.
good.
It'll be really good.
Maybe 4.5 for a point. Yeah, you know what? I shouldn't be so down. It will. I've kind of been trying to get my head around why I'm not super into this as like a main event. And I think it was Brian Elliott who was talking about this, and he was kind of, you know, he hit the nail on the head of why this card is lacking. And this match is, look, Punk's out, not their fault. It fell into the lap. It was the logical move to take. But what it also is a match that, you know, this card should be full to the brim, or at least for the top four matches, with matches that in no other circumstance we would see. Matches that, you know, oh my God, I'm getting to see, I'm getting to see top level New Japan guy versus top level AEW guy. I can't believe I'm going to get to see Hangman Page in a card that go one-on-one. Can't believe, you know, I'm going to get to see Hiroshi Tanahashi versus John Moxley. That would make sense if it wasn't just it's a New Japan feud. John Moxley is a New Japan guy. The reason this is well built and the reason it was logical to put it in is because we were already building through it for New Japan. And I think that's the thing that makes it feel less special to me. That's just eating at me, that knowledge that this was going to be a top-level New Japan match. And I think it would have been fine if it was a 1B and there was a 1A on top of it. But as the attraction, New Japan guy versus AEW guy match, maybe I'm being unfair, but that's where it slightly falters for me, that it's not like I can't imagine another scenario where I was getting this. I can't imagine another scenario where, you know, I was going to see these two go one-on-one. I can't imagine another scenario where it was going to happen. It's not that, you know. And we're few and far between with possibilities for that with the amount of injuries, but it sums up the card for me. You know, it's a solid replacement for Punk Tanahashi, but that's what Punk Tanahashi had going for it. It was a match I never thought I'd see. Moxley versus Tanahashi, I mean, I was pretty sure I was going to see within the next 3 months. That's where, you know, the good build of it does have a negative.
And they interacted recently on one of the New Japan Fight pay-per-views. They're in the main event alongside Will Ospreay and Juice Robinson, which you could argue you could also put onto this here as well, couldn't you? You just plop it onto here. The issue, again, I have with this is A, it's obvious who's going to win. And B, it's going to be a very good match. Tanner's going to turn up. He is. For him, it's a big opportunity and a big moment for him. He's headlining like a major pay-per-view in the US in front of a sold-out crowd. He's absolutely going to be going hell for leather. The thing is that this is a match that if Moxley is in New Japan over the next couple of years, you're going to see it at least once, if not twice. It doesn't have that kind of, like you say, that special feel to it. Like a lot of this doesn't, where it's people interacting for the first time and you're like, oh shit, here is their counterpart in New Japan.
Yeah.
But we're not getting that.
That's it. That's what you want. You want to be like, oh, this is, you know, this level of guy. And even something as simple as Hiromu and Darby, oh, they're kind of equivalent in both companies. That's what you want, and that's not what it is.
The Noah show.
I want to state strongly, you know, there are absolutely positives to putting this on the card and it being one of the matches that is, to its credit, built well. It's just the negative is I don't know if it's that special. I just don't know. You know, Moxley is, you know, he's got a foot in either camp, you know, as Darren says here, you know, he doesn't see him as an AEW guy because you can see him in other places. But yeah, Punk, Jericho, Hangman, Cole, Brian feel like AEW guys. And, you know, that's kind of what this card needs. If this was the 1B main event to a 1A somewhere else, I think it'd be fine. But that being the end of the card just feels like, oh, there should be one more. There should be another big singles match. There should be something. And there just isn't, is there? Like that is... This match again sums up this card. That I bet, yeah, we're all going to be Monday. We're all going to go, oh, weren't there some very, very good matches on this card? There might even be a couple of great ones. I think that is almost a guarantee. But that sums up AEW right now, doesn't it? You know, we've been saying this about the shows. Storytelling, hot garbage. You know, the booking of the shows, the way they put the segments together. Not been a fan of this last month. It's been messy. But what's been delivering? The wrestlers in the ring. The bell rings.
Yeah.
You're putting two of the best wrestlers in the world against each other. They're going to deliver. That's the saving grace, you know, and it's not the worst saving grace to have in the world. It's fucking pretty fucking great that, you know, we've got two companies here. You've got wrestlers who are that good that You know, we're pretty confident that's going to be the case, but you know, it is. It's predictable too. You know, as Darren says here, you know, they should develop Tanahashi, but they're not going to, because of course Moxley's going to win because of the G1, as you said there. But it's the fact that even the belt being involved kind of lowers this a little bit for me. Like, it was so, we've almost forgotten about it because we're removed from it now, but it's ridiculous that Tanahashi's like one of the number one contenders for the AEW title versus John Moxley. I don't think it helped to do that. I think you could have waited and done an interim title tournament after this pay-per-view was out the way. Yeah, there's just a few things going against it for me. Ben says here, yeah, if it was him, he'd have Tanahashi win. You could get Punk Tanner All Out. You know, but that obviously means you don't get your champion on TV. Just looking in the public chat here, good to see our mate Danny in there. Uzura Hart saying, yeah, he feels like, you know, he thinks Tanahashi's going to surprise everyone and win. But he does say, yeah, you know, Moxley has, as James, you said on Twitter this week, got a fair shot at Wrestler of the Year. So yeah, Uzura Hart saying there, he can't imagine it not delivering. It probably will deliver as a match. And I think you can probably say about that, about a lot of stuff on the show, JP, as a whole.
I think he will do. I just don't think what it could have done and what both companies could have really done with was an absolute killer supercard to just sort of really get people up and going and just have something that was just, like you say, was booked in that kind of, this feels like dream matches and feels specials. It's hard to see that when a lot of these people are already interactive for it as well. But certainly something, and before, you know, moving on from this into the TV reviews, thinking of something special, I watched MLW this week.
Getting into the main events of the moment. We're done with Forbidden Door. Yeah, we are going to do, we'll do a bit of a wrap-up, I think, of some of the other TV and some other previews.
Mate, the real Forbidden Door is TNA and Impact and MLW at the minute. There's a lot of love going on. In the JP-verse, like, we have the Benno-verse, we have the JP-verse, which primarily consists of MLW and Impact, which we'll come on to in a couple of minutes as well. Yes, we had the Weapons of Mass Destruction match between Jacob Fatu and Mads Kruger. We'll come on to that in a little bit. We had Myron Reed getting a backstage pep talk with Davey Richards. He then defeated Casey Navarro and Ares in a three-way retainer title. Ares is what we're basically with MLW's version of the Oddities. Oddities on that. I'm not joking. Holly Dead was there. Kruger said he promised to leave Fatu's body lying in ashes as his reign of cruelty begins. Fine. Then we had Alex Kane and Mr. Thomas were setting up, a beat the clock challenge for his title, and you've survived 20 minutes with the champion for 20 grand, which I thought was good. Los Maximos, the SATs, defeated Chris Cage and Jaden Baylow. And like an SAT style, there was a lot of ropey spots on there, but they won with the Spanish Flyers. You would have absolutely loved that. Cesar Duran then found Gangrel and Aries. Yeah, he's part of that Oddity stable, Gangrel. Yeah, on there. And Cesar Duran wants him to take out Micro Man next week. He's been a thorn in his side. I don't know if he's tall enough to really reach up to his size, but I digress. Another story for another time. And in the main event, Jacob Fatu defeated Mads Kruger in a Weapons of Mass Destruction match. The ringside area was filled with military equipment and large containers seemingly containing chemical weapons. One had an anthrax label on it. Another one had smoke billowing from it. There were weapons in other ones. He won in a quite traditional way with a splash from the top of the ladder. And then him and Kruger got into it. He put his head into like a box of what was like chemical waste, a bit like RoboCop, except, you know, when your man melted, that didn't happen, but he did take his mask. So whether or not we're going to get an unmasked Mads Kruger next week or not, there we are for that. Impact. There we go. Yeah, this is the thing. We're going to try and get to this as quickly as possible. Mia Yim defeated Chelsea Green. Then they set up a load of stuff next week that was happening on there. For the setting up, Against All Odds on there. Then Johnny Swinger and Zicky Nice, they lost to Shark Boy and Bapinda Gujar. Yeah, Shark Boy still around on there as well. Tasha Steeles is getting a rematch. We're getting a match with Jordan Grace next week as well. Josh Alexander defeated Cody Deaner. It then set up, Big Joe Doring having a bit of an attack on there. Sami Callihan versus Jack Price, which is, I work with someone by that name, so I hope it's not him. He'd really struggle. But they've set up the Against All Odds card on there as well, with Sami Callihan versus Moose in a Clockwork Orange House of Fun match on there as well. Jordan Grace versus Tasha Steelz, Honor No More versus James Storm, Briscoes and Good Brothers in a 10-man tag. No Chris Harris, that is to be noted. Josh Alexander versus Joe Doering, Mike Bailey versus someone to be determined in a four-way next week. And the main event, Honor No More versus James Storm and the Briscoes. Honor No More won on that one. Seems somewhat disappointing on there. Honor No More demolishing the Briscoes, which kind of doesn't really make too much sense. Oh, yeah, NXT UK was on. Ashton Smith is now still injured. Him and Oliver Carr are forced to vacate the NXT UK Tag Team Championship. Isla Dawn defeated Myla Grace. Saray defeated Nina Samuels. Brooks Jensen and Josh Briggs won the vacated NXT UK Tag Team Championship by defeating DeFamily. Is that Lucky Kids team? Dave Mastiff and Jack Stars and Mark Andrews and Wild Boar in an elimination match, which I'm sure we will never see any of that show.
I feel like I've been ripped out of like a comfortable womb where we were shitting on New Japan, and all of a sudden MLW are lighting people on fire and NXT UK are, you know, actually seems pretty normal, putting belts on nonces, but yeah. There you go. I saw even like the couple of people still sticking around watching NXT UK, Andy Ogden among them. Very very disappointing that Brooks Jensen and Josh Briggs have just walked in and won the belts. Our brand is dead. I think I saw Andy say, but yeah.
Our brand was never alive, mate. That was the issue, yeah.
Well, there you go. There's your quick TV results as JP does his best Excalibur impression. I'll try and do a similar job for the rest of our quick previews we've got for the weekend coming up. Not a lot else going on outside of Forbidden Door. SmackDown is obviously on later tonight. Is this fresh something tonight? Gunther and Ricochet doing a rematch, are they?
I'm
into it. There you go. Got me back in the room there. Get me on the BT bus. I'll be into that. Nice.
Will Vince be on it again?
I don't know.
Probably.
Probably. He's going to do the rounds. I'm surprised he didn't turn up in NXT UK. Aaliyah versus Shotzi is on the show before Shotzi gets pulled back to the Triple H verse. And Shinsuke Nakamura versus Sami Zayn. I saw Sami Zayn tweet about this today, that it was on free TV. Get to see us two wrestle. I mean, you know, can we also go back in time to when Nakamura gave a shit and Sami Zayn wasn't on his holidays? But
As in Nakamura's first match in the company when he gave his shit.
Yeah, literally against Sami Zayn. I got a lot of value out of Sami Zayn. If they want to, you know, I was thinking this, if they want to put Cena against anybody, he'd be my pick. I think they'd have a laugh then too. Would have to be a 5-star match. I think they'd have a good old time of it. But yeah, that's on tonight for fans of bad wrestling. But New Japan Strong is also on. If you don't have enough New Japan for the weekend, Fred Rosser versus Tom Lawler for the Strong Openweight Championship. And Minoru Suzuki versus Tony Deppen. I mean, they both sound better than a lot of Forbidden Door. So yeah.
I know.
Look forward to that.
What I'd give for Tom Lawler to be on the Forbidden Door, like it would seem a bit too weird, but yeah. I mean, Fred Ross is champion. That should be noted on there as well. And then finally, there is a Stardom pay-per-view this weekend. They've also had a lot of injuries. They're doing like a tour of people qualifying for the 5-star Grand Prix. Take note, New Japan. You could just have qualifiers and make that mean something. But there we go. You've got in the main event, you've got Stars versus Queen's Quest in a cage match. That's Mai Iwatani, Hazuki and Kaguma versus Taimi Hayashishita, Azumi and Saya Kamitani. Also in a cage match, you've got Natsupoi versus Tam Nakano. You've got an elimination triple threat match for the Artists of Stardom Championship. That's the trios title. Starlight Kids, Saki Kashima and Mama Watanabe from Wedo Tai versus Julia Mai Sakurai and Micah from Donna del Mundo versus Shuri Amisurai and Mirai from God's Eye, which is Shuri's stable now. And in a special singles match, you've got Himeka versus Mina Shirakawa. Then you've got Momo Kogo and Saya Ida from Stars versus Miyu Amasaki and Lady C from Queen's Quest. And then Unagi Sayaka versus Waka Sikiyama versus Raka. So there you go. That's in Nagoya, Japan. Fight in the top 2022, not fight to the top. It's a Japanese pay-per-view. They always go some mad way.
Good job, mate. But yeah, there's not a huge amount else going on elsewhere. What were the other cards you came across when you were doing research?
Defy and Warrior Wrestling, because they're in Chicago. So I think Warrior Wrestling had a couple of like kind of, I mean, I don't know, couple of kind of interesting kind of people on it, but it's like Warrior Wrestling. They exist in a kind of a vacuum. It's on Fight, I think, the Warrior Wrestling cards. I think they are up on there, but
Steph's out in Chicago. She was considering going to that. But probably have a better time there than obviously. Are GCW not running this weekend, or is that next week?
No, next weekend. Mm. I think they're having a week off for reasons. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I thought they were running
running
Chicago. Doesn't sound like them to miss a trick. Maybe they're not.
Won't you? I will check with Game Changer Wrestling. Maybe I'm completely.
They don't count. It's only GCW. Are they? If they're around, it'll be shit anyway. So that's going on too.
No, they've got a big Detroit shows next week.
So they're following the 30th. So they're following to Blood and Guts. That's right. Yeah. So that's the 30th Wednesday. That's for Thursday, right? So Dynamite's Wednesday, Blood and Guts.
Thursday.
And then that's Thursday after it. There you go. I knew they were around in town. So there you go. If you're in town, enjoy all of that stuff. But yeah, other than that, I think that brings us to a nice end there. We've buried it plenty, but if you are planning on order a forbidden door after all of that, grappleapp.com/support is where you'll find our unique referral link where you can click and it gives Grapple a bit of a kickback. You don't pay any more for the other pay-per-view. I believe there's even been some discount codes knocked around by Fight for the pay-per-view for people who are subbed to the AEW service on there. So that maybe tells you something about how sales are going. But yeah, you can get it cheap enough. And yeah, if you do it via the website rather than the app, you can get a better exchange rate if you're a Brit too. So make sure you do that. Buying dollars, not pounds, always a good bit of advice. Yeah. But yeah, other than that, the other plug would be if you did enjoy this show today, you're listening on the audio on our free feed, or you've tuned in on the public YouTube, thank you for joining us. But if in future you want to get this this weekend show every Friday, where me and JP hammer through the news and previews, JP gives that performance of the MLW results is not a one time thing. You get that every week for your money over at patreon.com/grapple, and obviously also join us in the pre-shows and get your chats on screen as well, and get all our other bonus stuff as well, JP.
Yeah, exactly. Get yourself across there, patreon.com/grapple.
So yeah, that's it for us for another show. Thank you, patrons, for tuning in. Thank you, live viewers, for tuning in with us on YouTube. We'll be back with Spotlight early next week with our review of Forbidden Door.
Maxalamo, Somali.
Amazing. Have a great weekend, everyone. Enjoy.
Adios.
See ya.